Hello, I'm Fred Stella, president of the Interfaith Dialogue Association. Welcome to another edition of Common Threads. Last week, we began our conversation with Dr. Dafina Lazarus-Stewart, and the conversation revolves around the concept of the necessity of talking about religion, faith, and spirituality in public places. Dr. Stewart is a professor in the College of Education and Human Development at Bowling Green State University. And a few other things that I have here on the bio is that Dr. Stewart's work is motivated by an ethic of love, grounded in justice, and informed by an intersectional framework that recognizes both the lived experiences of marginalized individuals as well as the material effects of interlocking systems of oppression. Over the course of a 20-year career in higher education institutions, Dr. Stewart has focused most intently on issues of race, ethnicity, sexuality, and gender, as well as religion, faith, and spirituality. These efforts include over four dozen articles and chapters, including Multicultural Student Services, Building Bridges, Re-envisioning Community, and Gender and Sexual Diversity in U.S. Higher Education, Contexts and Opportunities for LGBTQ College Students. We welcome once again to Common Threads, Dr. Dafina Lazarus-Stewart. Hello, Doctor.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thank you so much. We had such an excellent conversation last week, and I remember I had to cut you off at a point where you were talking about something that I had planned on asking you. But before we get to that, in case there might be a few people who did not prioritize listening to us both last week, God knows what in the world could have. Yeah, but let's talk about, again, very briefly, the idea of religion, faith, and spirituality, specifically on college campuses and other public places. Tell us the import of that.
Yeah, absolutely. So just to recap quickly, that it's these are aspects of our lives that we bring with us, in whatever way we choose to articulate that, whether that be through a specific religious tradition or just anchored in a sense of spirituality that connects more deeply through nature or through engagement in social justice or through a humanistic approach, that we are always engaged in questions of not only who am I and who are others, but what is my relationship to others? What is my responsibility as a member of a community? What is my purpose? And how do I identify purpose and live that out in a meaningful way? That these are all questions that I believe are grounded and rooted in issues of spirituality and faith, and what is transcendent. And so in whatever ways and whatever means we use to get at those answers for ourselves, we bring that with us to the college campus, whether that's a public university that is non-sectarian or to a private college, as well as to the other public spaces of our lives. And so the civic square, as we think about, as of the airing of this broadcast being 2 days away from a national presidential election and the election, of course, of other important and key officers and issues for our country, that all of that is imbued, really, with questions of ethics and spirituality. Absolutely.
So last week, when we were having our conversation, the very last issue we addressed was LGBTQ students and spirituality. And to recap, you said a couple of different things. You said that one very positive possibility for people entering college is that if they had been raised in an environment where they were considered to be, you know, abnormal, freaks of nature, sinners, whatever right. you want to, how do you ever want to describe it. And now all of a sudden they start taking classes that can affirm who they are. But right. then you said at the same time, there could be somebody on campus who sets up shop at a free speech zone and just rails on anybody who does not fit the
right.
societal norm for sexuality. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to get into that. Number one, can you make a case for that person being allowed to do that? You know, what are the limits of free speech on campus? And number two, is there also the possibility that people can take classes and not get affirmed for some perhaps mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. professorial mm-hmm. bias or something?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Thank you for both of those questions. I think they're both really important. Of course, we must affirm both people's the right to free speech that is granted by the Constitution, as well as the right to not engage that speech, right? And so we don't have to stand there in the free speech zone and listen to the person. But I also believe that with free speech comes responsibility and accountability for that speech and the effects of that speech. And so while it's not about barring this particular person or that particular group from being on the campus, it is about recognizing that one is accountable for one's words, and that so that means that not everything is okay. Because it's not just a person in the free speech zone, okay? It could also be one's roommate. You know, I was aware of a situation several years ago where a student who identified as a lesbian, this was in her first year on campus, had a roommate who was a very very religiously oriented, a very conservative Christian. I will, you know, admit that that was part of how that person identified. Although this is not the case, is not meant to paint with a broad stroke, a broad brush, rather, everybody who is a member of this faith. But holy water is a significant symbol and power for members of this group. And this you know, young woman was a lesbian. Reported, you know, waking up several nights in a row, and her pillow was wet, and she didn't understand why her pillow was wet. And finally, in a conversation with her roommate admitted that she had been sprinkling holy water on her while she was asleep to hopefully get rid of the demons of lesbianism from her. So it's Whoa. Not just what's happening on, yes, right? So it's not just what's happening in the free speech zone. I mean, these are things that follow students in the most intimate moments and places on campus, in their beds while they're asleep, you know, in the residence hall room, in the residence hall bathroom, where they may be, if they identify as trans, uncomfortable and have no place to go and feel comfortable simply to use the bathroom, to brush their teeth, to take a shower, to take care of those very basic daily life necessities. And so while people often want to talk about it and hold up and you know, very diligently and forcefully want to affirm people's right to say whatever they want to say, we rarely hear about accountability for those speech acts and consideration of, well, if that means you're going to give that person's and that person's free speech rights, but then, you know, people who are also adamantly affirming the, you know, people who are embracing and claim differences along sexuality and gender should also be affirmed in their right to speak that just as forcefully and just as freely. But the other point, you know, your other question about, you know, is it possible for that student, that lesbian, gay, bisexual, and or transgender student to be not affirmed in the classroom and other institutional acts on campus? The answer to that is absolutely yes, because even though they may be learning in a classroom about different points of view and different perspectives that may affirm the legitimacy of sexual diversity and gender diversity, their institution is framed in a way that reproduces the normalcy of heterosexual relationships and what we would call, as opposed to saying transgender, cisgender identities. So that there are only two genders, it is a man or you're a woman, and that is connected to whether or not your reproductive organs align with this, with what we would identify and recognize as male, or what we would identify and recognize as female. That binary holds and is legit. And so the entire institution is actually framed in ways that undermine affirmation of the legitimacy and the validity of sexuality and gender diversity on the campus. And so students are getting conflicting messages all the time, every day. And in many ways, those institutional acts of disaffirmation, as I might call them, work to, in many ways, undermine whatever validity and voice may be given to those identities and experiences in the formal classroom text that they are reading.
So do you work at all with counseling instructors on ways to be more inclusive in all of this? Mm-hmm. In particular, I was actually thinking, what about, say, the biology teacher who starts talking about Darwin, and then a student raises a hand and says, yes, well, what about this? And this student would start talking about creationism. Mm-hmm. Is there a proper way for instructors to respond to that? By that I mean, is there something that has been sort of codified, something that has been shared with instructors? These are best practices when you are challenged, not to say, what are you, an idiot? I mean,
So I think that there are people who have done some really powerful work around that. I've not been directly involved in conversations that specific to that. I have worked with and been brought in to conduct workshops for faculty and staff about how to nurture and facilitate more inclusive and equitable classroom environments for all students. But the question that you raise is, I think, very specific, and I think requires a lot of, first of all, compassion on the part of the faculty member, but also some very deft skills in how to provide both challenge and support to that student in that moment, right? And so I hesitate around the idea of best practices anyway, because I think that they become too easily used to really not engage with the underlying issues that are involved. But I think, you know, a college classroom is a place for engagement in particularly a biology class is centered around certain principles, right? The scientific method, for instance, and certain principles and certain practices, and that in certain values, right? And so these are the values and the philosophy that underlie the study of this discipline. And it perhaps would behoove even the faculty in the sciences to be transparent about what that philosophy and what those values are from the beginning, and that therefore not all ideas and not all theories are compatible with that philosophy and those values. and to affirm the legitimacy of that. So we have, you know, certain these are the values of inquiry and investigation, and, you know, scientific empirical investigation that underlie the study of this discipline. And there are other ideas that may or may not be valid, but which do not align with these values that have undergirded this discipline for, you know, X number of centuries. And so to have a conversation that makes transparent the ethics and the values from which we understand what knowledge is and what constitutes knowledge, I think that's something and an attitude that across discipline perhaps can be more can be made more transparent on our college campuses.
If you're joining us just now, you're listening to Common Threads here on WGVU. I'm Fred Stella, and with me today is Dr. Dafina Lazarus Stewart, and we're talking about identity, both religious / spiritual identity, gender identity, and how they manifest on campus and in individuals.
Just one other thing, though, Fred,
sure.
To that point in that question about the biology class, is that that biology class can be and is a threatening environment potentially not only for that conservative Christian student, because let's also keep in mind that not all Christians prioritize creationism over evolution as a way of understanding how humans got here, okay, which I think happens all too often, that there's this monolithic approach to Christianity that says all Christians, if you are a Christian, that means you are anti-evolution, and that's just simply not the case. There are many Christians who affirm and see no conflict between recognizing evolutionary science and a divine hand in how humans got here.
Oh, absolutely. Right?
I just think it's important to name that. Right?
It is, and when I brought up that possibility or that scenario, mm-hmm. I didn't use the word Christian because I know that
not.
Number one,
mm-hmm.
The majority of Christians around the world do find an ability to find compatibility with mm-hmm. the theory of evolution and mm-hmm. and their spiritual beliefs.
Right.
Clearly,
and
I know
diversity exists across other faith traditions as well.
Yes.
Right? And
yes.
So there's no monolithic way of approaching faith traditions or of assuming how a member of a faith tradition approaches a certain issue. There are no monoliths. But the other thing is that in that biology classroom, a student who is particularly a transgender student could also be threatened in that biology classroom because biology and our ideas around, many of our ideas around the gender binary and the rigidity and the fixedness of the gender binary have been normalized through and reinforced through medical science. Okay. So that, again, to return to a point I said earlier, that or perhaps last week, that college classroom can be a threatening place for lots of different people across the spectrum in many different ways.
So you're saying that medical science, as we understand it today, still enforces that thinking?
Absolutely. Now, there are some folks who break from that and who are affirming that that's not legitimate in many ways. But, I mean, the first thing that happens when a child, when a baby is born, is a doctor makes a declaration as to that child's biological sex. And on the basis of that designation, all right, from a medical professional, sets up how that child is treated and the expectations and norms that are put on that child from the minute they are born. You know,
sure.
We have in many ways so structured and aligned our governmental, and this is something that scholar Dean Spade actually writes about in a very compelling, very compelling book that he has authored called Normal Life. But our, indeed, even our government regulations and policies and laws, that even when they allow transgender people to be represented on their government documents, their identification documents, in ways that align with who they are, require affirmation and validation of their identity through the medical and pharmaceutical establishment. You know, so you had to have had certain surgeries, you have to be on certain hormones, you have to have clearance and validation by a mental health professional. So we have absolutely implicated and imbricated the medical industry, both pharmaceutical as well as surgical and mental health professionals, in either in improving and justifying gender diversity, as legitimate or not, because, you know, up until, you know, as recently as maybe half a century or so ago, those same professionals were saying that, you know, transgender identities and sexual diversity were mental health problems or mental health defects.
This is true. This is true. Yeah. Now I really, this next question may be putting you on the spot a little bit, but you're
as
probably
if you haven't done that already.
So you've been here at Grand Valley State University. Can you now, you're not here now.
Right.
You're at Bowling Green right now, correct?
Correct.
Okay. All right. So you're a safe distance away. How they doing? How's Grand Valley doing? How in terms of inclusivity, in terms of religious, affirming religious identity, and all of that. Do you have any sense of that?
I can't really answer that question, Fred. You know, I mean, I've been on Grand Valley's campus, you know, twice for two full days, neither of which in the specific role of actually doing a climate assessment or evaluation of programming and services around religious pluralism or any of this stuff that we're talking about. Okay, so I want to make that clear that I really don't have the data necessary to make the kind of determination that your question asks for. What I will say is that I do see that there are professionals on campus who care about these issues, who want to make sure that they are doing the best that they can by students, and to do more than just the best we can, but really provide services and support that are empowering and liberatory for students from marginalized groups. So not just race and ethnicity and sexuality and gender, but also around issues of religion. And I think that's why the seminar that I just presented, a few days ago at the institution was done. It was those professionals who said, we want to get into this issue. We want to make sure, we want to know more. We want to understand more about this and what our role is in helping to encourage students to attend to this part of their lives and to be prepared and equipped to engage students when students bring this up. Okay. So I think it's very clear that there are people who care and that are willing to create opportunities to augment their own learning and to inform their practice. And at the same time, Grand Valley State University is a university where, you know, there is still room to grow. We are all we all have room to grow in many of, in across these issues. And so there's no place that's arrived that can check the box and say, boom, we're done, we've done that, and we're good to go now. That's not realistic. And so there at Grand Valley, as at every other institution in this country, there are students who are still who are recognizing and pointing out the weaknesses, the gaps, and the failures in their experience related to what institutions are and are not doing enough of or doing inappropriately related to really supporting inclusion and inclusive campus community.
Just the fact that a college contacts you and says, hey, come here and share, I'm assuming is a really good direction to be going in, right?
It it's a good first step.
Gotcha. Well, it has been a pleasure. It has been a pleasure, Dr. Stewart, to speak with you today and last week as
Thank
well.
You.
And I wish you great success in your further endeavors.
Thank you. I appreciate it. It's been a wonderful opportunity to speak with you as well.
You've been listening to Common Threads here on WGVU. I'm Fred Stella, and with me today, Dr. Dafina Lazarus Stewart. And we've been talking about diversity, gender issues, and spirituality. Please join us again next week here on WGVU-FM.